let's get started, and we'll finish up Psalms 128 and head into Psalms 19. All right, on Psalms 128. Randy, you feel like reading the entire psalm for us?
Sure.
All six verses.
Psalm 128. How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord and walks in his ways. When you shall eat of the fruit of your hands, you will be happy, and it will be well with you. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house, your children like olive plants around your table. Behold, for thus shall a man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion, and may you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Indeed, may you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel.
All right, so as we were going through, we've gotten to the last two verses, 5 and 6, and that's what we'll do, look at today, and then go on. But what does it mean to a psalm of ascents or a song of ascents?
Something they would be perhaps singing as they're headed to the temple in Jerusalem. Physically upward, right?
Yes, right. So as they were ascending to the temple, ascending to worship, they would, these are some of the songs that they could sing or would sing were going up there. And of course, this is talking about those that fear the Lord, and that those people, of course, are blessed in their fear. Now, as we go on to, well, I thought we'd go on to the next slide, but maybe we'll only think about going on to the next slide. There we go. As we go on to the next slide, we see that in verse 5, we have in the American Standard Version, Jehovah bless thee out of Zion, and see thou the good of Jerusalem all the days of thy life. Yea, see thou thy children's children. Peace be upon Israel. And if I look in the English Standard Version, it says, the Lord bless you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. so they're all fairly close to one another. So, but I think the point that Mickey is making here, we see that the Psalms of Ascent are directed toward ascending toward the temple in Jerusalem, or as we talk about it, as Zion, and that's where the Lord meets with his people. That's where the Lord's presence is known in Jerusalem. And so, but that's the idea physically. But spiritually, of course, we have a deeper or different meaning regarding that. And so when we look at that, we understand that this psalm doesn't just relate to people who are ascending the Temple Mount in Jerusalem physically, but also has to do with us, as do all these psalms. We sometimes have a tendency to think that the only people to whom it applies might be the Jews of ancient times, but that's not the case. Linda, do you have your hand up? Okay. So our goal is to be in the presence of the Lord all the time. Yeah, Randy?
This is just a question. I don't mean to throw you off guard, but do you know what the history of the word Zion is? I don't.
as far as the etymology goes, I'm not sure what Zion itself means. Zion originally stood for the city of David, which was below the Temple Mount. When they first captured the city of the Jebusites, and then they expanded and took over all the way up to where they ended up later on building the temple. But I'm not sure what Zion itself means.
I just did a quick word search on the Bible Gateway. It said the very first time it's used is 2 Samuel 5, verse 7. Hmm. It says, nevertheless, David captured the stronghold of Zion, that is, the city of David. So it's identified as the city of David, but so is Bethlehem.
That's true. And that's where the Mormons get things mixed up. They look at that and say, it says the city of David. And they say, well, see, that's Jerusalem. You go, no, it's Bethlehem. So make up your mind.
But it's also, I didn't count that many, but it seems like it's mostly used in Psalms. A lot of Psalms have it in Simon.
Oh, okay.
But in this instance, and so forth, I guess, in the other Psalms, it's meant to be in Jerusalem because they're on their way there.
Right.
And a Psalm of Ascent, anyway. They're on their way to the temple.
Yeah. Let's see.
I was just curious if you knew anything more about it.
Nope. But Jenny's looking it up. And she'll have a comprehensive dissertation on that soon.
I didn't want to be sidetracked, but it's right there in the verse. Lord bless you from Zion. What exactly does that mean?
I don't know.
He's from Jerusalem.
Yeah.
In the temple is.
Well, and like the slide says, physically is Jerusalem, spiritually the meaning can be deeper. So Jerusalem, the temple, is where, you know, God resides.
Yep.
And so then Zion is where God resides, and spiritually we think of that as, you know, the heavenly realms rather than physical.
And I think Zion is used in the New Testament somewhere, but I just did my search on the Old Testament, so I don't know, but... talk about, it seems like heavenly Zion is a word, but maybe that's from a song.
That is in a song.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm seeing it in 2 Samuel, as you say, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, and then, as you say, a lot in Psalms. The Song of Solomon and Isaiah, a lot in Isaiah and Jeremiah.
Hebrews 12:22 says, "You have come to Mount Zion and the city of the living God."
Okay.
Heavenly Jerusalem.
Romans and 1 Peter as well.
Okay. The heavenly Jerusalem. All right. That's good. That was where? Hebrews?
Hebrews 12:22.
It's a good thing you didn't quote 12:22. Linda says 12:22. Okay. All right. Yeah, it's actually used quite according to my search routine here, it happens 161 times in the Old Testament. So used a lot, even in the minor prophets. All right. Do you have a dissertation on Zion yet?
Kind of. I just need to look a little more. So it says that it was the easternmost of the two hills of ancient Jerusalem, and so it was the stronghold city that David took over from the Jebusites. But that it is primarily thought of in regards to the spiritual heart of Jerusalem as opposed to, like, where the people live. So it seems like that it's possible that the easternmost hill is where the temple was and the westernmost hill is where the people lived. But I would have to verify that.
Yeah, I'm puzzled by westernmost and easternmost because in Jerusalem it's northern and southern. The city of David is south of the current city of Jerusalem. In other words, the excavations of the original city of the Jebusites is on the south end of Jerusalem. So maybe if we look at it on a map, it's offset to the east or something like that. I don't know. But there was kind of a little town that David took over from the Jebusites, and then they expanded up the hill, and that's where they ended up building Jerusalem. And, of course, the temple went up on the mound that was on the, in my thought, the northern portion of Jerusalem. So, all right. When we have down here on this second bullet point to dwell in the presence of the Lord, then how does that happen? Who can ascend to his presence? And then Mickey mentioned Psalms 15. Randy, would you like to read the entirety of Psalms 15 when you have a chance?
Yes, Psalm
15.
I looked up a couple of the New Testament references, and there looks like they're quotes from the Old Testament.
Quotes, yeah, okay, that would make sense. Yeah.
Psalm 15.
Another long one.
Got the Bible?
Yep, please.
Psalm 15. O Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill? He who walks with integrity, works righteousness, and speaks truth in his heart. He does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend. In whose eyes a reprobate is despised, and who honors those who fear the Lord. He swears to his own hurt, and does not change. He does not put out his money at interest, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things will never be shamed.
All right, so that shows our point as to that. As Mickey mentions here, who may ascend to his presence? It's the man that acts righteously and does things in an upright way. He says that he does things. Who swears to his own hurt and does not change. In the English Standard Version, it says, and so when he makes the statement of what he's going to do or what he believes or something like that, and he doesn't swerve from that, even though it may cause hurt to him. So that's he's a person with integrity. And then in Psalms 24, verses 3 through 5, the writer there says, "Who shall ascend the hill of the Lord, and who shall stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not lift up his soul to what is false and does not swear deceitfully, he will receive blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation." So when we look at Psalms 128, it says that when it says the Lord bless you from Zion all the days of your life, we see the kind of person that will and can ascend to God's presence. It's the person that's upright, the person that stands by the Lord all the days of his life, as it says. And then continuing on with the end right at there at verse 6, where we have here, "Peace be upon Israel. And may you see your children's children." It's my quotation from the English Standard Version in the one of the cited verses here, Proverbs 17:16. I kind of expected it to be used here in Psalms 128, but here it says, "Grandchildren are the crown of the aged, and the glory of children is their fathers." So in the readings that I've done before, I haven't seen grandchildren before, but uses children's children. I think the New American uses children's children a lot of times. Yeah. So, but we have a tendency to call that grandchildren. No. So, "Peace be upon Israel," a closing blessing, he says, of the psalmist. And part of the blessing of God upon people is the continuation of the family. And I think there's an emphasis here on the fact that we're looking at family's life. It's the family that where a lot of the teaching goes through. These songs of ascent aren't necessarily taught just to the men in the synagogue. You'll remember in Deuteronomy 6, it says, "Speak them when you get up in the morning, and such like as that." I'll murder that verse if I try and do any more. But the thing is that the people are admonished. I believe it's Deuteronomy 6. It's on the left-hand page in the left-hand column, about a third of the way down.
It's Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 9.
To read that for us, Linda.
"Hear, O Israel, Jehovah our God is one Jehovah, and thou shalt love Jehovah thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be upon thy heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and they shall be for frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them upon the doorposts of thy house and upon thy gates.
Okay. I think what's important for us to see there, and also here in Psalms 128, when it talks about seeing your children's children, is the emphasis on family and how important that is for teaching. There's a lot of people that nowadays get concerned because they say, well, the church is not teaching my children. But the fact of the matter is that where the children are supposed to be taught is in the home. The church will reinforce that with whatever the church can do. But we spend a whole lot, our children spend a whole lot more time with us than they do at the church building. So, though we make Bible classes available for the purpose of reinforcing teaching, we understand that it is the obligation of the family, of the parents, to bring the children up in the way that they should go. Randy?
That reference there that says Judges 2:10.
Yep.
Right after Proverbs 7:6.
Right.
That's kind of the negative. It's the other side of the coin.
Other side of the coin of that. That's right.
And Judges 2:10, I got right here. This is right after Joshua died.
Right.
It says, all that generation also were gathered to their fathers. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel.
Yep.
Then the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Baal. So they served idol worship immediately.
That's right. It's like Mickey talks about from time to time, you know, you can't go around with a baseball bat hitting people to get them to obey. Interestingly enough, Moses and Aaron and Miriam and Joshua and Caleb, all of these people were influential in keeping the people on the track. But as soon as their influence was gone, the baseball bat, as it were was put away. And the people, as it says, knew not Jehovah, knew not God. That's unfortunate.
And of course, Judges.
Yes.
It's all about that cycle.
Exactly. Right. And so right after this statement here, we're looking at the cycle again. Yeah. Move away from God. Plead to God. Be delivered. Move away from God. And that, what was it like? 15 cycles over quite a long period of time. It was, I want to say it was several hundred years. 400 sounds about right. Yeah. No. Yeah. So right, we've got the declaration and Proverbs about the glory of the children and their fathers, and then we, as Randy, as you said, we see just the opposite of that in the comparison of Judges 2:10. And I think Mickey's got down here, we've observed that if our nation is to change, it will begin with the home. And that, I think we see that just in daily living these days, that the home seems to have disintegrated quite a bit. And it's unfortunate because we see that indeed it is the home that causes us to be taught consistently and according to the Word of God, and that's unfortunate. So, as he says here, we need to resolve to do no matter what to fear the Lord and to walk in His ways. Where is that? Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13 and 14. Yeah, fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole of man. The American Standard adds the word duty, and I'm thinking the whole, I think, works better. It is to be our all, is to fear God and keep His commandments. All right, so that wraps up Psalms 128, talking about blessed is he who fears the Lord. And let's go on then to Psalms 19. Yeah, Randy.
Just one comment about both 127 and 128.
Yes.
You can just imagine that if you're singing this on your way to worship. It's a worship song.
Yes.
But it's also a very encouraging song to sing to one another. When you hear, if you heard other people singing, you know, you heard a congregation singing and they're all walking toward the temple, they're all on their way to worship.
Yes, right.
It would be very encouraging to hear this. You can understand, you know, how blessed is everyone who fears the Lord. That is the theme of both things. And that's why we're on our way to Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
We're on our way to the temple, because we fear the Lord, and we're on our way there. And, but they're all happy together. And the one says, you know, you'll eat the fruit of your hands, you'll be happy, and it will be well with you. These are happy people.
Yes, happy people. That's right.
The children that are mentioned are probably right there with them.
Right. Well, you look at the time when Jesus decided to stay in Jerusalem for a couple of days after the rest of the family left. You notice that they were traveling in a family group, maybe even a town group. I don't know whether they all came from Nazareth. I was going to go Bethlehem. No, that's not right. That's the city of David. When they're all traveling from Nazareth, so it. We see in the context there that the group of people was traveling back home, and they didn't see Jesus, and so they went back after what, and didn't find him for 3 days. So I don't know how long it took them to find him, but of course if you're traveling in a huge group and you got, all right, I count, 27 kids, okay, we're good, let's go. You go, oh, I don't count very well. There's only 26.
We picked up somebody else.
That's right. Yeah. some Samaritan kid or something like that. So, but it happens. You remember, those of you that remember Carlos Gatti, he has four daughters? Four daughters. And I think Barbie is the youngest one. Mm-hmm. And they were leaving the church building one day. All the kids were here. Barbie was just an infant. And he got a fur piece down the street before he realized he left the Barbie here. So, yeah, you got 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, that's good. Let's go. That's, it's like watching, which is the first Home Alone?
Yeah.
Count heads. Oh, one of the neighbor kids was in there. Get out, kid. But I counted. Yeah, you did. All right. all right. Yes, thank you for that. And Psalms 19. Now, Psalms 19, and I didn't look it up, but we have a song in our songbook that talks about this. The law of the Lord is perfect. The law of the Lord, I think that's what it says. The law of the Lord is perfect, right? But, yeah. Anyway, so we've got 14 verses there. Would you be interested in reading that, Randy?
Sure.
You're all tuned up there.
Yep, Psalm 19. The heavens are telling of the glory of God. Their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. Day to day it pours forth speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their utterance is to the end of the world. And then he has placed a tent for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber. He rejoices as a strong man to run his course. Its rising is from one end of the heavens, and its circuit to the other end of them. And there is nothing hidden from its heat. The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true. They are righteous altogether. They are more desirable than gold, yes, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey, and the drippings of the honeycomb. Moreover, by them your servant is warned. In keeping them there is great reward. Who can discern his errors? Acquit me of hidden faults. Keep back your servant from presumptuous sins. Let them not rule over me. Then I will be blameless, and and I shall be acquitted of great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer.
Okay. What number is that, Linda?
10.
Number 10. Okay. And that's the name is the Law of the Lord, right? All right. So song number 10, the Law of the Lord, is taken from this particular psalm. And in the version that I have here, it says this is to the choir master and the Psalm of David. So perhaps that's why the people that wrote these songbooks picked it up. So for the choir master. But so entitled as Psalms from Nature, and we can see how that goes as we go along here, is because we see that right at the beginning it says the heavens declare the glory of God. And as Mickey has here at the last point on this chart, the heavens never say anything in words, and yet their message has gone out to the end of the world. I think that's important for us to see, is that God's glory and his power are revealed through the heavens. In other words, what God has created. And so many people are loath to look at those and believe that that's anything that God has made, or that he's made it for our purposes, that he's made it for our blessing, for our comfort and joy. But we understand that the heavens do declare the glory of God. And he's got several statements here about his grandeur, his splendor, his eminence. And we look at Revelation, the fourth chapter, in verses 9 through 11, talking about that. It talks about that it's talking about the throne scene, and it says, whenever the living creatures give glory and honor and thanks to him who is seated on the throne, who lives forever and ever, the 24 elders fall down before him who is seated on the throne and worship him who lives forever and ever. They cast their crowns before the throne, saying, worthy are you, our Lord and God, to receive glory and honor and power, for you created all things, and by your will they existed and were created. And so when we look at this, we see that this goes well with the glory of God, talking about the heavens declaring the glory of God and the sky proclaiming his handiwork. when it says that in the second verse, the day to day pours out speech and night to night reveals knowledge, there is no speech there, nor are there words whose voice is not heard. Their voice goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. It's just a reiteration of the fact that we can see God in the creation that he has made and made for us. and then we see the power of God in his creation, certainly at the end of that a quotation, Revelation, in verse 11 of chapter 4, it says that by your will they existed and were created. And then Romans, the first chapter in verse 20, says, for his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made, so that they are without excuse. So God has made everything that there is, and because he's made everything that there is, and the heavens, as it were, declare that glory, then we have no excuse in denying them. But I know that many do. I was raised in a household that denied those. And so it's very interesting to see when one looks at the kind of households where God is denied, how their lives are so different from those households in which God is affirmed. But we see that God's righteousness and his glory is declared by what he's created. And then in his righteousness, Of course, in Psalms 50 and 6, it's much like what we've seen here. The heavens declare his righteousness, for God himself is judge. And then comparing that with Psalms 33, 5, he loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of the steadfast love of the Lord. So we see the declaration of the heavens here, and we can talk about it being from nature, you might say. And so that's what the emphasis there is. So also, did I skip a slide? No. Mickey goes into here onto a general revelation, and then I think on the next slide he talks about a special revelation. I'm not sure exactly what his point is here, but I think if we look at Acts the 14th chapter and verses 15 through 17, we see a general revelation to man, as it were. So Acts the 14th chapter, verses 15 through 17 says, "Men, why are you doing these things? We also are men." These are the people that in, is it Iconium, are getting ready to worship Paul and Barnabas. And why are you doing these things? "We also are men of like nature with you, and we bring you good news, that you should turn from these vain things to a living God who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and all that is in them. In past generations, he allowed all the nations to walk in their own ways. Yet he did not leave himself without witness, for he did good by giving you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness." Now, to whom is he speaking?
Gentiles.
To the Gentiles, to this really idolatrous mob of people that were getting ready to sacrifice to Jupiter and
Mercury.
Yeah, that could be it. And that's what they were calling Paul and Barnabas, I think. They were getting ready to sacrifice because they thought that these were the gods come down to them. And so, but we see here when Mickey here is talking about a general revelation, we see that these things that he mentions at the end, he did good by giving you rains from heaven and fruitful seasons, satisfying your hearts with food and gladness. Now, these were not God's children. These were people alienated from his presence. Yet, in general, he blesses all man by giving us fruitful seasons, giving rain from the heavens, and so on. So we see that good comes to both, or blessings come to both good and evil, in a general sense. That's the way that God has made it. So he says there then in Acts 14 that he gave this to everybody. And then skipping down in the next point there, the presence of the universe demands a creator. We understand that this again is a universal or general thing, because the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man. And this applies whether you're one of God's children or not. That God created, he made the world and everything that's in it. And so he did that for everybody, not just for his chosen people, as it were.
This is where he's showing, he's making the point to the Athenians that here, I'm going to tell you about this unknown God that you're...
That's right.
So this is... setting the stage or opening the door to more, to showing them who the true God is, rather than all of the idols that they've got up and,
right,
and the one that they, in case they missed one, you know.
Exactly, right.
You actually missed the whole thing. There's only one.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. So, yes, that's right. And Paul, as he was in Corinth, in Athens, he was amazed at the various idols that were there, statues all over the place. But he noted that one that was to the unknown God. And he says, this is who I declare to you. And then he goes on to say, the God who made the world and everything in it. They, I think, some of them found that a little hard to believe, and others were saying, talk to us further about this. And I think he took a great opportunity there to say, well, you got this temple, this idol, rather, here, says to an unknown God, I'll make him known to you. The fact that there's order in the universe demands a designer. Psalms 19th chapter in verses 4 through 6 says, you got that, Randy? You there? No? I'll get it. Okay. 19, 4 through 6. No, that's where we are. I'm sorry. We're in Psalms 19. I thought, wait a minute. That sounds familiar. Let's go ahead and read it again to reemphasize.
4 through 6. The divine has gone out through all the earth, and their utterance is at the end of the world. And then he has placed a tent in the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoices as a strong man to run his course. Its rising is from one end of the heavens, and its circuit to the other end of them. There is nothing hidden from his teeth.
Okay, so once again, we're anthropomorphizing. In other words, we're making like people something that's inanimate. So he's talking about building a place for the sun to live, and a tent for the sun. It comes out like a bridegroom leaving his chamber, and so he's making the sun seem like a person and like a strong man that runs its course. And we understand that he does this for us to understand that he's made that sun. And not only has he made that sun, he's put its course in the way that he wants it to be. And that's why we see it that way, and that's why it behaves the way that it does. Is so that we can not only depend on it, but we can understand, like with the rainbow in the sky, that God is there. God did that, and it goes excuse me, it goes from there to there because that's the way that God made it. And it has done so from the beginning and will continue to do so until God stops it. Randy?
I don't see the scripture that comes to mind for me is not listed up there, so I'll just go ahead and read it. That's
good idea.
Isaiah chapter 40.
Isaiah 40?
Beginning verse 22.
22.
Isaiah says, it is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell in. It is he who reduces rulers to nothing, who makes the judges of the earth meaningless. Scarcely have they been planted, scarcely have they been sown, scarcely have their stock taken root in the earth, but he merely blows on them and they wither, and the storm carries them away like stubble. To whom then will you liken me, that I would be his equal, says the Holy One? Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these stars, the one who leads forth their hosts by number. He calls them all by name. Because of the greatness of his might and the strength of his power, not one of them is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and assert, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and the justice due me escapes the notice of my God? Do you not know? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired. His understanding is inscrutable. He gives strength to the weary, and to him who lacks might, he increases power. Though youths grow weary and tired, the vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. This passage, I don't know, it's always just meant a lot to me. I go to this for strength. When your faith seems weak, you go to a passage like this and you go, wow, how can I not believe?
Yeah.
You know, that passage, lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these stars. The one who leads forth their host by number, he calls them all by name. We think about, well, the very hairs of your head are numbered. Well, you know, they're getting fewer and fewer.
Indeed.
The years go by. But think of how many stars there are. We don't even have a number that goes as high as the stars are. And this says he has a name for all of them. We don't even have enough words in our dictionary to name all the stars.
Right.
All the dictionaries in the world don't have enough words to name all the stars. But God has a name for every star. That's how mind-boggling it is to try and have a conception of how great this God is who created everything.
Yeah.
Because if the universe is his creation, he doesn't live in it. He lives outside of it.
Yes, he does.
And within it, and through it. I mean, it's just, like I said, that's what is just mind-boggling about trying to conceptualize how big and how powerful this God is who created it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you were reading through that from Isaiah, I thought, just think of the statement that God made to Job. He says, "Were you there when I created all this?" I go, you need to think about this, Job. So, yeah. Yes, God has done a lot for us, and that's what's happened, is that he created the heavens and the earth, and we see that he put Adam and Eve there, and then things sort of went along from there, and we're up to where we are now, but we can see where it all started, and we can see that the heavens declare the glory of God in the things that are about us. Yeah, good point. That's Isaiah chapter 40.
Beginning of 22. That whole section, all the way through 40 to 41, it's just a wonderful passage. A lot of it is God speaking through Isaiah. So you see God in first person in these chapters.
Oh, okay.
41 verse 4, he says, "I, the Lord, am the first and the last. I am he." It's just really interesting to read God in the first person.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Speaking directly through Isaiah.
Mm-hmm.
Using the word "I." I am the Lord.
All right. So we talked about the designer, right? Surprising them. He's the creator. He's the designer. And then heavens and earth speak forth the decree of God's presence, power, and glory. So, in Psalms 19, the first two verses, the second through the fourth verses, night reveals knowledge. There's no speech whose voice is not heard. The measuring line still goes out to all the earth. The words to the end of the earth. He sent a tent for the sun. So he's placed things where they need to go. And that's where we see them. Specifically, verse 4 talks about set a tent for the sun. And then Romans, the 10th chapter and verse 18, speaking here, Paul says, "But I ask, have they not heard? Indeed they have, for their voice has gone out to all the earth and their words to the ends of the world." And so when Paul is talking here to the Romans, he says that the voice of God, the voice of the heavens has gone out to all the world. So essentially this is a quotation from here, reaffirming that indeed it's God's glory and power that the heavens declare, and they do so in a physical way, you might say. And then he says it's inexcusable and foolish to dismiss the voice, their voice, the voice of the heavens. And so in Romans, the first chapter, in verses 20 through 23, Paul says, "For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or gave thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images of resembling mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles." And so we see here that Paul has been talking about the people that have decided to take a path other than that which God has laid out for them. And he says they've become fools by doing such a thing. Oops. Let's see. I think we're out of time, yeah? Yeah. I don't know that Lynn can hear us back there. But so I think what we'll do is that next week when Mickey will be back, we'll continue on in Psalms 19 about the heavens declare. We've talked here about this general revelation, and then in the next one we talk about a special revelation. And it's just sort of a nuance of revelation that's interesting to note. All right. Thank you.